Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 26th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. And joining us once again in the studio, Dr. Susan Sekuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Now is the time to call with your pet question. A vexing health issue that your pet is dealing with? This is the time. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Doctors Sekuli and Dallas, your questions coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and here to take your calls, Dr. Susan Sekuli of the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Saratoga, and Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Dr. Sekuli is the founder of the Just Cats Clinic, which provides specialized care for felines, a graduate of the University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine. She is a member of the American Association of Feline Practitioners and the American Veterinary Medicine Association. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets, frequently using a holistic approach. She earned a doctorate in veterinary medicine from Ohio State University and specializes in veterinary acupuncture, herbal medicine, and geriatric care for animals. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, and we try to get to as many emails as we can, but the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Sekuli, Dr. Dallas, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
It's been a while. What's
it
new?
Is.
Anything new?
Anything new?
Well, I guess not.
Just house construction and craziness.
Oh.
And personal side.
Yeah.
Anything new in veterinary medicine? Well, following up on our hemp conversation last time.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Dr. Sekuli got me interested in trying that out in some of my patients, and I've done that and have had some really interesting results.
Do tell.
I would say what has been most striking is seeing some of my older patients really come to life and just, and I don't know where the effect is because they can't give me the feedback.
Right.
I don't know if it is just giving them more energy. I don't know if it's helping with pain management, but we've had a few patients who have really just kind of bounced to life, which is neat. And I'm actually just started treating one with cognitive dysfunction. And in the first 4 or 5 days, the owners are saying that they're seeing some improvement.
So, how is this administered? They don't smoke it, right?
No, they don't smoke it. It's like an essential oil drop that you give. Yeah.
Into the food?
Mm-hmm.
And it helps with the appetite of the kitties and everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
Terrific. Yeah. All right. Well, you guys ready to take some calls here?
Sure.
All right. Number is 800-348-2551. Fiona in Saratoga Springs, you're first.
Hello. I thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that my dogs are patients of Dr. Dallas, and she has used acupuncture and Chinese herbs, and we have been able to tackle and improve an ongoing toenail issue called solo lupoid onchodystrophy.
Wow.
That if left untreated could be fatal. And as well, we've had great success in curbing seizures due to epilepsy, and now we're moving on to other things. So I think Dr. Dallas has made a wonderful improvement in my pet's well-being and health, and they love going to see her.
Wow.
And she and my other dog's veterinarian sort of work hand in glove in terms of diagnostics and various skills and tools that they bring to the practice to help all our pets. So it's a wonderful thing, and I'm glad that you've got those two wonderful veterinarians on the talk show today.
Well, can you once again say the name of the nail issue? That was great.
It's called solo lupoid onchodystrophy.
Wow. Wow, that's very impressive.
SLO is what it's known as.
Well, let's find out from the doctor. Thank you, Fiona. Let's find out from the doctors what, in fact, that is.
That's just an autoimmune destruction of some of the tissues around the nail bed.
And it can be
fatal? It's pretty rare. Yeah, yeah. It's actually Hi, Fiona. I think this is Fiona's dog is the first case I've ever
really
across. Yeah, it's not something I see.
And so, how did you treat that?
Well, he was being treated when I met Fiona and Leaf with Chinese herbs, and his more pressing issue has been his seizures, which have an interesting seasonal pattern of spring and fall.
Which tends to happen.
Yes.
Now, why would seizures be seasonal?
Well, if we get into Chinese theory, seizures are considered wind, and we tend to see windy conditions during windy times of year.
Spring and fall.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, over to line two, and April in Mill River, Massachusetts. April, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling with actually another rare autoimmune disorder that I'm just learning about because we noticed some loss of muscle definition in my Labrador's face. He's 12 years old, and he's in really good health. But I'm just learning about masticatory muscle myositis, mm-hmm. and I would just love to know more about it. So I'll just listen.
Okay.
Sure. Also another not so often seen condition in dogs. So this is, again, where the immune system gets confused and starts to attack part of the body. That's what autoimmune is by definition. And in this particular case, it focuses just on the muscles of the head, and they really just turn into like a fibrotic tissue. Yeah, it's really, again, not very commonly seen, but typically it's treated with, from a Western approach, some immune suppressant drugs. Just meant to just calm the immune system down. And it is a necessary step. I think that's something that really does need to be done. Where I come in sometimes from an integrative approach is to try to lower the doses that are used of the immune suppressive drugs by using Chinese herbs. But later in the process, I think once the disease is somewhat stabilized or just early on to mitigate some of the side effects of the immune suppressive
drugs.
Very
interesting. April, you want to follow up?
I do, actually. Is it known, are there any like tick-borne illnesses that are known to trigger this, or is the cause or etiology known?
Not that I know of, no. I think with most autoimmune diseases, I mean, it's a really good question, actually, because we do have autoimmune diseases that are known to be triggered by Lyme or tick-borne infections, but really any infection can set off an autoimmune disease. I mean, you know, you could catch a stomach bug and your body could suddenly confuse a little protein on that stomach virus with something in your body. And if you have the genetic predisposition or constitution for autoimmunity, you know, that could set something off. So no, not that I know of. I have not seen any research or indication that the tick-borne illnesses are associated with this particular autoimmune disease.
April, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop, and we go to Pat in Leverett. Pat, you're on.
Hi, yes. I have two questions. I have adopted a cat from the local shelter. She's a wonderful cat, but she's been an outside cat, and we have foxes and coyotes and all kinds of bad things here. She just desperately wants to go out. She tries to run out every time there's a chance. Is there any? And I've given her a dog cage out on the deck, you know, a wire cage to sit in to look around, but she just wants to run around. Any suggestions?
Wow.
And she's getting fat because she's not getting enough exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some very nice cat fences that are out that, you know, provide them an area where they can run around. I think there's check online because they're a lot more ability than we used to. I actually had a client that, you know, the invisible fences with the collars, they taught their cat how to stay within a certain area.
But that won't keep the
coyotes and foxes
right.
away.
Well, then I would put her out just when you're around. Yeah, and during the daytime,
yeah.
You know, the coyotes will tend to be more those morning, early morning or evening times.
Mm-hmm. And the second question is that she came with a gum disease. They said gingivitis or stomatitis. I don't know if it's the same thing. And the only solution, they said, is to remove her teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any new breakthrough on treating this? Mm. Like, I've heard colostrum, you know, that you can get for herbal, from herbal companies.
Yeah. It is still one of our most challenging dental conditions that we deal with. And yes, right now we're still doing extractions, whole mouth extractions to relieve it.
Really?
Going back to that whole autoimmune, it seems to be some type of a auto response from the cat toward either bacteria, the particles under the gum somewhere that seem to be affecting them.
And, have you heard of colostrum as a cure?
I think it's been helpful, yes, but I don't know if it has cured.
So there's no real cure. There's no antibiotic or anything that
has been shown. How advanced is her case?
Well, she's had 8 teeth removed now, and I'm afraid they're going to say, I mean, I give her colostrum. I try to put stuff on her gums. She won't let me brush her teeth, but I've tried to put topical things on her gum and a periodontal joint health thing that they've given me to rub on her gums.
Yeah, it's tough.
From Henry Schein Company.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one.
Don't know. I dread having all of her teeth removed, but
I know. You know, I've been through
very
this.
Very healthy otherwise.
I've been through this with a few clients, and their cats, I have to say, did fare so much better once the teeth were gone. It's such a grim prospect, but it really, honestly, the thought of it is worse than the reality, and they are healthy and happy once those teeth are out. And it's, I know it's hard to think about, but from their perspective, they really do quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't really have to worry about it too much anymore.
Yeah, well,
it's not like
Have you heard of colostrum for cats?
I have. Not as a cure, no. Maybe more as something that might mitigate the severity, but not so much cure it. But, you know, as long as she's okay right now, I would say keep going with it. And maybe some Chinese herbs might be helpful just in terms of cooling her off a little bit. But I think it would be hard to administer, too. I think if her mouth is painful, it would be hard to, you know.
That's the trouble we find a lot of times.
Yeah, it's hard to administer things.
Did the areas where the teeth were extracted heal well?
We actually lost her. We're about to take a break here.
Okay.
But if you'd like to answer that question yourself and give me a hypothetical answer, we'll do that after the break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today. Dr. Sekuli and Dr. Dallas here with you. More of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Waterfront dining on their pet-friendly deck in the Hudson Valley, the1850house.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany. ParkAlbany.com for on-street and garage options. And George Heigl Antiques, Falston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Sekuli and Dr. Dallas answer your questions. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. And we got an email here from Joe in Eagle Mills. And his question is, my dog and I are just back from our walk at Grafton Lake State Park. I know that in recent years, we humans have been urged to treat all water we find in the wild before we drink it. Is it okay for the dog to drink pond water on our walks? And that's from Joe in Eagle Mills.
That's a great question.
That is a good question.
How do you stop the dog?
That's question number one. How do you stop them?
Right.
I have to say, dogs, their GI tracts seem to have the capacity to handle a lot of contamination that ours does not. Mm-hmm. My dog has found carcasses in our backyard and has been happily chewing on things that have been roasting in the sun for how long, I don't know. They do clean their own hind ends, right. And they, you know, so they do things with their, you know, they can tolerate a certain amount of contamination. There is one waterborne illness that is of concern. Fortunately, this is a rare condition that is found, but we do see cases of it called leptospirosis.
Mm-hmm.
It is a spirochete. It's transmitted through urine, so it would be coming from the urine of wildlife, let's say. We do say that it could be, the risk would be to find it in standing water somewhere.
Okay.
Fortunately, in my career, I've only seen a couple of cases of it, so it's not ubiquitous.
And there are vaccinations.
And there are vaccinations for it, which are about 60% effective.
All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. And Ty, well, you better going to have to tell me how to pronounce your name in Ashfield. Well, how do I say your name?
Oh, Tirtalia.
Say it again.
Tirtalia.
Okay. The spelling was nowhere near that. So we'll just roll with it, and we'll just call you Ms. X. You're on.
Okay. I have two questions. So in November at the local shelter, we got a cat and a dog. They're both about 4 years old. And I have one quick question for the cat and one for the dog.
Okay.
So the cat periodically and randomly gags, kind of gets flat and gags and never brings anything up. We've talked to the vet about it, and he suggested that it had to do with hairballs, and he prescribed Laxatone and brushing her every day, which I do, but it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Sometimes I notice if I pick her up and I'm holding her underneath, she might start to gag, but it's kind of random. And then for the dog, the question is, she's great with people, very gentle kind of dog, but she really doesn't like other dogs, so if we're out walking, she just starts barking a lot, and she's a pretty small dog. So we've been using the look at me command and trying to like get her to distract her. Mm. But she doesn't really like to play with dogs particularly. She played with one dog once kind of thing. So just wondering if you have any suggestions for either of those things.
Okay. I'll tackle the cat question.
Okay.
Okay.
So for me, I would be a little concerned about asthma for the amount of coughing that she is now doing. Asthma hairballs, they look and sound exactly alike in the cat, so it's very difficult to tell. But for me, an asthmatic cat continues, even if you are giving her a little bit of hairball medication. And there's some good hairball medications out there now that seem to help. And so
this is Laxa something.
Okay. Yeah, Laxatone. And if you're still hearing a lot of coughing, I would have her worked up more as an asthmatic, and there are medications for that. And I also look at the litter a lot of times. I have been amazed at how many times if we change the type of litter, that cat stops coughing.
So less dust?
Yeah, to a less dust, just a different one, you know.
She was coughing pretty much as soon as like she got home.
Okay.
So we brought her back and they checked for there's some fatal cat disease, FIP or something, and they checked for that but couldn't find anything. And then her heart seemed okay. Is there any relation to the fact that sometimes when you pick her up and hold her underneath, she then gags?
Yeah, you may be just your physical touching of the chest may be triggering her to have that cough response. Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
and she does it independently.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Suggestion.
I appreciate it.
And as for your dog, how old is the dog? You said four.
She's about four and a half.
And what breed? And what breed is she? Or mixed breed? Is she?
She's a very very mixed breed, a very sweet little dog. But and she also goes to a facility here and like visits with some of the patients and stuff, and so she's very good with people, but she just you know, if you're walking along the street, she'll if she smells or sees a dog, she'll start barking a whole lot.
Yeah.
And so we've been trying the look at me, but any other ideas? She's always on leash, you know.
Yeah, I lived with and trained a reactive dog, and I tried all the tricks in the book. And a couple of things that is she treat motivated or?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I got her yesterday to kind of stop, and I gave her the treat. Then she turned around, of course, and kept barking. But you know, the treats work, and she's.
Okay, so
and she's responsive.
Okay. What I did was I cued the term find it, and I would just put treats on the ground at home and teach her to find the treats, and I would move them farther and farther away from her and make a game out of it. And then when we were on the walks, I would start throwing the treats on the ground so that her nose would go right into, you know, seek and find. And a lot of times I was able to scoot past. It doesn't necessarily fix the problem. To fix the problem, you have to do a very slow process called desensitization, and that doesn't always work. I went to every type of seminar and trainer you can imagine. It's a commitment, but, you know, you might want to pair up with a trainer and see if they, you know, have some tips for you. We have some really great trainers in the area, and, you know, the methodology is always changing and evolving too, and it's possible that what I was taught, you know, 5 years ago is not even really considered up to date. So,
all right. Well, thank you for the call. We have to move on here. 800-348-2551, the number on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. And Bill in the town of Root. Bill, you're on.
Hello, doctors. I'm going to be taking care of two older cats and was told that wet food is the way to go because they might have a bladder problem if I don't feed them wet food. Is that what everybody is feeding cats these days, wet food?
It is. It is the it is the new trend. I jokingly say, you know how butter years ago wasn't good for you, and then it turned around, and now it's good for you again. Well, when I went to vet school many years ago, we all were told dry food only. Canned food has too many calories in it. You want all dry. Well, that has totally come full circle, and now it is canned only or mostly with a little bit of treats, and the can provide it is less processed, and it has more moisture in it. So it helps with your urinary issues. It helps with your bowel movements. We as a practice advocate canned only diets for our patients, and it has helped even with grooming so that you're not getting matted hair coats. So
there you go.
Good job.
Well, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Debbie in Woodstock. Debbie, you're on.
Hi, yes. I have a 15-year-old rescue poodle, Bichon. And a couple of years ago, he was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. And he's been put on the typical medications, I guess, for that, Enalapril and Lasix.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yes. Yes. Yep. We're here. Yep.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Recently, not maybe 6 months now, he has been coughing terribly, constantly. He's got that. Occasionally, it's that cough with the, you know, sound at the end. Mm-hmm. That's typical congestive heart cough. And then he's got another cough, which sounds like a goose honking. And sometimes all night long, all, you know, during the day. Anyway, the vet put him on prednisone and also on hydrocodone. And I've sort of played with those two medicines on and off over the past few months because the coughing doesn't seem to get better.
So I'm thinking it's what breed is your dog again? Bichon
poodle, you said? Supposedly a poodle Bichon.
Poodle Bichon.
He's a rescue dog.
Okay. A lot of times when the cough gets to that stage, it can mean that your dog's heart is somewhat enlarged and can be pressing on his trachea. So it's actually a mechanical irritation of the trachea that's causing the cough, particularly the goose honk piece that you're describing. I'm not sure that prednisone is going to be super helpful with that. Sometimes the hydrocodone can be, but you may want to consider adding in some holistic options. You're down in Woodstock, and I do believe there's a really great holistic vet down there who can provide some complementary care that might just help mitigate some of the more advanced state of the congestive heart failure. Have you been to a cardiologist? Have you seen anybody?
I haven't been to a cardiologist. I will tell you that the last time I brought him to this vet, who is supposedly a holistic vet, he said the good news is that his heart seems to have shrunk a little bit from the previous x-ray or whatever test they took. And he said his lungs were clear. And basically said, I have no idea what's causing the cough. Yeah. I don't see any evidence of trachea problems. And
So, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to assess all of that just on an x-ray because you're just catching a moment in time.
Right.
You really want to meet up with a cardiologist. We have a couple in Latham, actually. I think those would be closest to you. And they would do an echocardiogram on your dog's heart and really be able to, you know, direct the medication a little more precisely. And they're really great at that practice.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was thinking of seeing a cardiologist.
I would go that route before I would go holistic and just make sure that you know, the Western side is well taken care of.
Debbie, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets Today. And we are joined by Dr. Chris Dallas and Dr. Susan Sekouli, and you at 800-348-2551. Kate in Beckett. Kate, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the woman who called with her cat having the stomatitis issue.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cat. And after 4 or 5 years of antibiotics and steroid treatment, I finally gave up on that and had her teeth extracted. She lived for another 8 years with no pain, ate anything I gave her, dry food, wet food. And she was a different cat. The pain of that was so bad that she was just a different cat after the extraction. I mean, it's a tough choice to make, but it really made a huge difference.
Thank you,
cat.
Kate. Absolutely. Thank you. And that's hard, like Dr. Dawes said, it's a hard thing to accept that that's our only solution sometimes, but it really does improve their quality of life.
How on earth will a cat eat dry food with no teeth?
They swallow it whole.
You're kidding me.
They just
can't
do.
Can't be safe. All right. Let's see. Over to line three. Bill in Albany. Bill, you're on.
Hello. I did want to talk to the doctors about my dog that is a 4-year-old dachshund with a condition that just developed, or just we found out about, called acute punctate keratitis. But can I mention something about the woman from Woodstock with the coughing dog?
Quickly.
I have a relative who was on Enalpril, and I think she said her dog was on Enalpril. And there's something called an Enalpril cough. And once the relative was taken off an Enalpril, the cough eventually
Excellent.
Went away. So
Very
that
good.
May be an issue that's not known if the dog's on an Enalpril.
How about that?
I love these radio call-ins. You know,
we learn
you
something
learn,
every
you
day.
You do. All you right. learn from the human side, the animal
All right.
side.
Bonus
awesome.
Points for Bill. All right, what's your question?
Okay, acute punctate keratitis apparently only affects dachshunds, and I have a tweenie, 16 pounds, very healthy. And about 2 months ago, her eyes not just began tearing, but began turning red, and went to the vet and found out it's a condition, I guess, congenital and not contagious, called acute punctate keratitis, and she was being given eye drops with steroids in them. And then one night, you know, it developed a really, really bad irritation of the eye. I went back to the emergency room, and now is on oral as well as topical steroids. But does this situation get worse, or does it stabilize, and what can we do to help?
I can't say I know very much about this particular condition. Do you know much
I'm
about
sorry.
This one?
I don't either.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
This is not... this is not a
You've
condition I've
us.
Seen before. Yeah.
Stumped the vet.
Stumped the vet.
Sorry about
stumped.
That, Bill.
Yeah.
Apologize, but thank you for joining in. And over to Kevin in Albany. Kevin, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My blue tick coonhound, when we go for a walk and stuff, there's a chicken joint down the road from us. And you know how they walk with their noses to the ground? I'm afraid if she finds a bone, if what might happen if that's bad. You know, there'll be no getting away from her if she gets one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Docs, what do you think?
Walk in the opposite direction.
Why? The chicken bone's not a good thing?
Not at all.
Not if they're cooked.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
If they're raw, it's not a problem. But
why the cooking is a
very
problem.
Sharp.
They splinter, yeah. And they can be really sharp.
But raw, they're better?
Yeah. Oh, I feed my dog raw chicken bones all the time.
Well, that's not a good thing then, Kevin.
No,
yeah,
Kevin, I would be,
one.
I agree with you. I'd be very concerned.
So is there anything I should do, like, immediately? Like, is there a way to make her throw up, or, you know, what do I do?
Well, once it's down, leave well enough alone, because her stomach acid will dissolve it. It's the problem is we worry about it going from her mouth down to her stomach and just getting caught up somewhere, like, in her esophagus. So once it's past once it's past her throat, you just kind of, you know, say a little prayer and hope that it just all makes it down to her stomach okay. And if there's any gagging, any odor coming from her mouth, you know, within a 24-hour period, you'll want to take her in. But we do worry about an esophageal, you know, foreign body in that case.
Okay.
But her stomach will take care of it once it's in.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. It's Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. And we go to Greg in Beacon. Greg.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
This is a question for the doctors. Hello, doctors.
Hello.
Hello.
And it kind of relates to a dog, but I think it would be applicable to cats, too. We just received a notice from our vet warning of, you know, dog flu, and we should get our dog vaccinated against the flu. Is that kind of a serious issue, or is it something that cats should be vaccinated against as well, or... What's your general feeling about vaccinations for flu for dogs?
Yeah, I'm generally not promoting the flu vaccine.
Why?
Because the flu seems to be an issue more in high density institutions like shelters and what have you. So I don't at this stage. No, we're not seeing enough cases that are serious to warrant a flu vaccine. And okay. I think some of my colleagues might disagree with that.
What side effects will we see? Well, in other words, would you be concerned about...
From the infection or from the vaccine?
From the vaccine.
I'm very conservative with vaccines in general. I believe in sticking with the core vaccines and using a more evidence-based approach to vaccination, which we're not really doing in the veterinary world right now. So.
Okay.
And I would probably pipe in that on the cat side, I tend to agree. I'm told that I'm a very vaccine minimalist. I think we, as veterinarians, tend to over-vaccinate our animals. Mm-hmm. And so I lean toward, I don't know, I cannot talk about the flu vaccine for the dogs, but I do understand the flu, if the dog gets it, it can be fatal. It's a mm-hmm. very serious infection.
Okay. Well, Greg, we'll have to leave it there. We're taking a break. It's Vox Pop. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts. A home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires. Bedandbowl.com. Pelham Auto Service, at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. A worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the Capital Region to engage in conservation science, lecture series, and citizen science participants, helping collect data and research, AlbanyPineBush.org. And the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And we are doing our Pets and Vets today with Dr. Sekouli and Dr. Dallas. This one came in, Docs, via email from Andrew, who writes, "We have a 15-year-old indoor cat, Nina. She has recently been peeing outside of the litter box. Not every time, but she seems to miss it or intentionally pee outside of the box. We clean litter box every day and clean where she peed on the bathroom tile. She will never pee anywhere else but in the litter box or next to the litter box. Is she peeing outside of the box because there was a smell of her pee outside from previous accident? Or does she have a problem with the litter? Or is there any health issue that I should be concerned with?" And all that is from Andrew.
Wow.
I'm tired now. You answer.
Oh, Andrew. 16-year-old cat.
Yeah.
Okay. Very somewhat common, that a very common history that we hear. And what we have found is there's a multitude of things that may be causing it. The litter box may not be the right size. She may not be squatting as well as she used to. You know, she's a little stiffer. She doesn't do yoga. So
as far
you
as you
have
know.
To. Exactly. And so I'd make a bigger litter box, shorter sides, make sure you take the hood off. So there are things you can change with that litter box. I'd keep the location, and I'm very happy to hear she's near it. So it seems to support that changing something with the litter. And I also watch the depth of the litter. So either older cats either don't like a lot of litter because then it feels like quicksand, or not enough litter. So alter it, keep trying things. We have an older 20-year-old cat at our Just Cats in Guilderland, and it's been amazing to watch. We ended up getting one of those totes that fit under a bed and used that as a litter box because it's big enough for her to get in. But she was doing the exact same thing that he's describing.
And you fixed the problem.
She uses the litter box every single time.
Tremendous. All right.
Cool. Over to... My staff is happy.
All right, let's go over to Laurie in Hinsdale, Mass. Laurie, you're on.
Ow. Yes. I have an older cat who's about 20 years old, 21,
nice.
And she's recently been diagnosed with some thyroid issues. It's on the high side of normal. And in addition, she has kidney issues. I don't know what the concentration of urine is right now, but I know the blood work shows that she's in the midst of that. And I work with both an allopathic as well as a homeopathic vet. And the homeopathic vet suggested giving her a little bit of a baby aspirin twice a week to help prevent seizures that might come as a result of thyroid disease. So my question to you is, have you heard of that practice? Is this a good idea?
I have never heard of that practice. Have you heard of
no,
that practice?
No, I have not either. No.
So, no. Yeah. But I one little comment about this combination of conditions, I think, is that... You know, hyperthyroidism is thought in some ways to treat, in some ways, I don't, that's not the best word, but is sort of an antidote to the renal failure.
Huh.
And
right, I've heard that.
Yeah, so I walk with kid gloves a lot of times around these cats because sometimes they find a nice balance there on their own.
Yes,
and
hypertension. A 20-year-old cat obviously doing something right.
You are doing something right.
That's right. And hypertension is often the only thing that you really need to keep track of. See if you have somebody who can.
I was just going
to
suggest that.
Yeah,
check the blood pressure.
Because both of those conditions cause hypertension.
And what is the average blood pressure of the average cat?
Well, it depends on where you take the blood pressure. At home, it should be around 160, 170.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets up to 180 and above, that's when we consider it concerning and you should be treating.
Okay. And what do you find for numbers at your clinic if you've done it all nicely and they're not too stressed out? What
you
kind
know,
of numbers
we'll,
do you see?
Again, those ones
same
that are
numbers?
Over 180 and above, we will tend to treat for
okay.
it. We will do house calls and check blood pressures at home.
Oh,
so.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Over to Natalia in Saratoga Springs. You're on.
Hello, doctors. My question revolves around dog paw pads. My dog hurt her paw pad last week. Not sure how. It seems like a little piece of it was sliced off, or I don't know if she bit it off. And I put an antibacterial ointment and used a cone to keep her away from it. And it seemed to be better, so I removed the cone, and this morning I noticed it looked raw again. So I'm calling to ask for suggestions. Should I repeat what I did before, go to a vet? And also, if you could explain kind of the dog paw pad, the anatomy, or what is it made of, and maybe ways to protect it?
Well, that's an interesting question. So, first of all, I probably would have a vet take a look at it if it doesn't seem to be getting better. I would not put an ointment on there. Ointments are petroleum-based, and they tend to inhibit wound healing. So just keeping it clean, I know. We all use, everybody wants to reach for ointments, and I'm not a huge fan, unless something's really dry. But so just keeping it clean, you know, is which I know it's hard because it's her pad and she's walking around. As far, I mean, they're basically, if I remember my anatomy correctly, it's a keratin.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The problem with pads, I find, is if it could be sutured to close it, would be the ideal. So that's where having a veterinarian look at it, because it does take a very long time to heal if you're just keeping it with an abrasion off the top.
Yeah.
And then you are going to have to watch.
Is it a laceration, or is it like some of the pad came off, like the edge of it peeled off?
It seems more of like maybe a little slice of the top is of one of the sides is gone.
Yeah.
So it looks red and raw.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily an opening.
Right, right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And as far as, you know, protecting them, I mean, you certainly don't want to be walking, you know, during the hot times of the day on the pavement. I mean, if it's hot to your feet, it's going to be hot to theirs.
Yeah.
Not that that's what caused the laceration, but and really an appropriate diet. You know, a lot of times deficiencies from the diet can, you know, cause weaknesses of the pad, can cause them to crack or be overly dry. So, you know, fish oils are always nice for making things a little more, you know, healthy. And anything else that you thought of, can think of to add to that?
Okay. Natalia, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. And it's now time for Valerie in Monterey. Valerie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a dog who has hives. She's a 2.5-year-old mixed breed pit bull bloodhound mix. We call her a blood pit. And she has these bumps. She gets these bumpy hives on her head, and this time they actually moved back into the shoulder area. So my question is, what could be causing this, and could it be the flea medication in the front line?
Top of her head and along her neck?
Yeah, the whole top of her head gets just little bumps.
And how long do they stay there? How long, like, do they resolve on their own after a short period of time, or do they persist for days?
They usually resolve after a day or two. This time she began to really scratch at it, and she wound up cutting her cheeks, and I brought her in to the vet. The vet put her on antibiotics for the wounds that she had caused herself and prednisone for the hives.
And does have you noticed it has timed it with her flea medication? I mean, does that seem to be timed correctly, or?
If it is, it's a few days afterwards.
I mean, that's a possibility. That could be a delayed hypersensitivity reaction. Not all hypersensitivity reactions happen immediately. Because I have to say, the presentation, the location of that is very unusual. It doesn't really speak to some of the more common allergens like food or even pollens or what have you. Those generally manifest in different parts of the body. So you actually may want to consider changing your flea and tick preventative. I'm a fan of the Seresto collar, which you just put on once and leave it. I've used that on my dog successfully, but that would be my first suspicion.
I know I don't do much with the dogs, but I'm going to pipe in two things that we see in the cats around the head and ears is mosquito sensitivity, where and they come out as these little bumps like you're describing, hives, and they have allergies to mosquitoes. And then the other is essential oils. I love lavender, and that would be a good one that you could safely use on to apply topically to those areas without it, you know, causing any side effects.
What would the lavender be expected to do?
It is our topical, sort of an antihistamine, to be honest. Yes, it's a very nice one. Anti-itching and relieving a lot of that redness.
I'll be darned. All right, over to Jeffrey in Johnsonville. Jeffrey, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I have a 6-year-old border collie blacksmith dog.
Okay.
We're a blacksmith in the shop. Every time he comes out to work, he makes a bolt for the door. But I have an issue with him. His canine teeth. We've been playing the frisbee a lot, and all four of his canine teeth are like halfway, almost like they're gone. They're like broken off. And I was wondering if that's if that's a concern. Should I do something about this?
I see a
and
lot.
And my other question is I feed him the Milk-Bone dog treats. It gets like 6 a day, and I'm wondering if that's too much.
Okay. Well, going back to your teeth question, I do see worn teeth quite a bit. And I don't want to tell you to stop playing Frisbee with your Border Collie, because I think they're that's what they were, other than herding sheep, I think that's what they were put on the planet for, is catching Frisbees. They are amazing.
They are.
He's awesome. He's so fast.
You know, it may be worth a visit to our local veterinary dentist who's in Nassau, New York. Just to find out.
I know where that is. Yep.
Yeah,
I've been there.
I've often wondered about this myself. I feel like I do see a lot of worn teeth, and there are no untoward side effects of that. They don't seem to be painful, even though it looks like the pulp cavity is exposed.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
And then as far as... Go ahead.
I don't see any pulp or anything. It's just like pathway through.
Okay,
well, that's good. If you're not seeing the pulp cavity, then you see he has a few more Frisbees he can catch.
What about the milk bones? Six a day.
That's a little heavy for me, just because those are empty calories. If you go to one of our locally owned pet stores, like Benson's, for example, you can find some awesome treats that are really wholesome. I personally love the dehydrated beef lung treats.
Yes.
They're affordable. You can break them into small pieces. It's just protein, and they're made in the United States. And I also love Ziwi Peak, which is actually a kind of a fancy dog food. And you can use that as treats as well. And it's more economical as a treat.
All right, Jeffrey, thank you very much. This one is actually germane to the topics we've been discussing today, especially the caller before the last one. This is an email from Brooke in Saugerties. Wanted to ask the vet if there was an effective, more holistic flea and tick treatment for dogs.
Do you have any thought?
That is a balance.
It's a hard one.
It is.
I want to say yes. I want to say I have a list of options for you, and I really don't. I think for fleas, you know, there are holistic options out there. I think a lot of essential oils can work well, depending on whether you have a really big flea problem or just an occasional flea problem.
Yeah.
But for ticks, people swear by rose geranium oil, and I have had patients in my office reeking of this oil as we are pulling the ticks. I have not found anything.
I think any of them, if you use them as you need them, and maybe the collar goes on only when the dog goes out, those kind of things to prevent, then selective use of the products, I think, would be helpful.
And I think of the products as less toxic than the 5 or 6 infectious diseases that our dogs can pick up.
Good point. Dave in Pittsfield. Dave, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering if, on the average, a wild animal like a bobcat or a mountain lion, their health compared to a domestic animal like cats, seems like the domestic animals get sick a lot. The dogs, the cats, and stuff. I'm wondering what.
I bet the wild animals live a lot shorter, but.
Yes, well, that's right. They.
Yes,
do you have any thoughts
I think.
On this?
I do. Because I work with the Scruff program, so we do TNR programs, and I must say there are some really healthy cats out in the wild, but the unhealthy ones don't survive, and so that's what we tend to see. I think it's dietary related a lot.
Exactly.
The wild animals, the true wild animals, are eating their healthiest diets. So
we are not feeding species appropriate diets to our carnivores, and
we're getting there.
Let's take care of an email or two here toward the end of the program. This is from JJ, who says, hello doctors, how would you treat a cat that has a very low white blood count of 1.4, temperature of 99.4, and needs oxygen because of harsh BV lung sounds? What's BV, lung sounds?
Bronchovesicular.
Okay, thank you.
So, it doesn't sound right.
Okay, low blood count. What's a proper white blood count?
Oh, probably at least 3,000. So
1.4? That can't be right.
1,000.
Oh, 1,400, you think?
Yeah, so versus 3,000.
And how old is the cat again?
Doesn't say. And it's a cat, low blood count, temperature of 99.4, needs oxygen because of harsh BV lung sounds.
Yeah.
I wonder if the red cell count is low as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this is one you'd need to follow up with questions.
Or need more information.
Yeah.
All right.
And please get them.
All right, no demerits awarded. That's not your fault. This one is from Carl. We have two cats, and our younger 3.5-year-old cat will sometimes defecate outside the litter box. We have two litter boxes in two different rooms. Neither box is covered and are cleaned every morning. We can't find a pattern to it, except that it seems to occur between 4 a.m. and 9 a.m. Any insights?
okay, wait. How many cats?
Sorry. I threw it out already.
Oh, jeez. I was supposed to have remembered everything.
Two cats.
Okay.
The younger one, 3.5 years old, will sometimes go potty outside the litter box.
Okay. So we know at least who the culprit is.
Right.
I would go back sort of like we just did with the older cat, is change some variables in the location and watch the dynamics between the two cats. When I see inappropriate defecation, especially there, unless it's a abnormal stool, you know, diarrhea or too hard, then it is something going on with the interaction between the two cats.
And it would only occur between 4 a.m. and 9 a.m.?
That's maybe when they're having the worst episodes of discontent.
Well, interestingly, that's in Chinese medicine, the large intestine is at high tide between 5 and 7 a.m.
High tide? Is that really?
That really is a thing. Yes, it's a circadian clock. And if your body's balanced, you will perform certain functions optimally at certain times.
There you go.
Who knew? I swear to you, the things you learn on this program.
Chinese medicine has an answer for everything.
Well, you know, on that happy and very interesting note, we'll end the program.
We'll pick up there next time.
Thank you, Susan Ciculli and Chris Dallas, for being
you,
here.
Ray.
Support comes from Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting klezmer and Chinese. Violinist Josh Sussman playing classic Israeli and Hasidic music, in addition to a Jewish art exhibit and Chinese dinner, August 9th at 7 p.m. at Saratoga Chabad, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org for details. Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Authentic Mexican lunch, you pick fruit, petting zoo, fresh market, cider donuts and bakery, now open. Love Apple Art Space, 518-828-5048. And Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Del Mar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, binoculars, nature gifts, and garden decor, where people and nature come together, wildbirdjunction.com. Thanks again to our doctors for being here today. Thanks to you for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your call or email today. It's a busy program. What are you going to do? Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the gardeners are back to answer your flower, plants, and tree questions, maybe some shrubs, whatever. Stand by now for news.